Welcome to the middle of the air.
So, on this episode, we get to talk to Christy English, who is a romance writer. And before we do that, I got a friend of hers here, Stephanie Fagan. And Stephanie, tell us how it is to have your a very own romance writer in your book club.
It's a lot of fun. She gives us insight that we don't get from anyone else who isn't an author.
So welcome, Christy.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Ken.
So I know that I know I missed you when you did the launch of your latest book, which is called
How to Wed a Warrior.
Okay. And that was the now. Is there a name for the series? Because I read your How to Seduce a Scot.
Right. I didn't come up with these catchy titles. I wish I had, but I didn't. My publishing house, Sourcebooks, came up with them. But my editor came up with the overall title of the series, which is Broadswords and Ballrooms. So it gives you the whole gamut.
All right.
But interestingly, in this series, the broadsword is not wielded by a hulking man, as you would think, but by one of the girls.
And the publisher you work with is?
Sourcebooks Casablanca.
Now, if I understand it right, looking at the cover of your book, the way it works is you go in to your publisher and they have a room full of men with their shirts unbuttoned. Is that right?
And that's exactly right.
You pick the one that you want on the cover of your book.
I wish I were involved with that. Sadly, they don't get me involved. They did show me, it was interesting, the first time ever, they showed me some of the women that they were choosing because the female character is the point for these types of things. The female character. If you don't like the woman, the men are important too. You hope that the reader falls in love with the guy, kind of, a little bit, but also she has to fall in love with the lady too. She has to want to identify with her and really be interested in her finding happiness and finding joy. So for some reason they didn't show me any of the cute men, though really cute men were put on my covers. They only showed me the women they were looking at. Of course I didn't get a vote. But that's probably for the best. Warm up.
What happened was it got out to the public that Christy was going to be here.
No.
And some of her fans came. And it was, you know, a big rush to the room, and she had to sign 50 or 60 autographs. And I think we've taken care of her fans now, so we can go back to our recording. So I want to ask you, just tell us about How to Wed a Warrior and how it fits into the series. And maybe
it's
the
second book. Right. So we've got How to Seduce a Scot. And the premise of these novels is that there's a wild Scottish sister, and her mother is determined that she's going to get married. But this girl has frightened away all of the suitors in Scotland, in Edinburgh particularly. So,
What is it that she does that frightens the men?
Well, she outshoots, outhunts, outfishes them all, and can outride. And so they don't like being shown up by a little 18-year-old girl. So she's not very popular with that. So her mom's like, look, take her further south, take her to London, and you can't come home until you've gotten her married off. So the two brothers, two big hulking Scottish guys, take their little sister down to London to marry her off. Well, little sister, Mary Elizabeth, has no interest at all in getting married. She's bored with the whole concept. She wants to go hunting and fishing, basically. That's her fun. She does like to go dancing. She doesn't mind new clothes, but, you know, it's not her first choice to go to a ball or some nonsense. But so while they're down in London, the two guys, her two brothers, Alexander in the first book and Robert named for the Bruce in the second book, meet their true loves and get married. And so How to Wed a Warrior is Robbie, a.k.a. Robert the Bruce, who falls in love with an English woman.
Oh, I thought this was going to be the one where the little sister...
The little sister gets married. Now, that's coming up in December because, like all Shakespearean comedies, in a romance novel, we have to end with a wedding. That's how
it works. We were just talking about that a little bit offline there. And... I read the first one, How to Seduce a Scot, and I think I mentioned when we talked before, I think the little sister was my favorite
She's
character.
A great, yeah, she's great.
And one of the reasons for it is that she's not, to satisfy the form of your romance novel, mm-hmm. At the minimum, you have to have a man and a woman.
Right. Falling well, in love, my subgenre. Yeah.
Or whoever. Some, two people.
Yeah, two people
in
fall
love.
In love.
Well, she's, the little sister was kind of this wild card. And I got the sense that you could do anything with her you wanted to.
Right, as
a
writer.
She was really wonderful, fun character.
And it's fun. I actually got my edits back this weekend from my editor. And so I'm rewriting that book now.
Okay.
The one where she meets her true love. Because that, for me, is the key. You don't... Back in the 1820s, you got married as a woman because you pretty much needed to, socially mm-hmm. and economically speaking. But in our modern age, we don't need to. We don't have to. We can. A lot of people choose to, but a lot right. of some people don't for various reasons. But the reasons romances, I think, are popular, and they're popular with me, because we find that true love, that hope, that sweet storyline in there, mm-hmm. the happy ending. I think that's just where you can find joy and, you know, on the pages of a book, kind of be transported to a different world for a
right.
little while.
Right.
So Mary Elizabeth's going to find
hers. And that's
hers.
Probably what makes it one of the most popular, best-selling
genres
right. there is.
Right.
I think
and
that's still true,
them.
Isn't it?
As far as I know, that's the truth, and I enjoy it. It's fun. I get as much joy from writing them as I do from reading other people's, you know? Because
right.
I get to hear the story first. The characters come to me, and they're like, well, this is what happened, you know? So we're writing it, I'm writing it, and they're telling me what's happening. And that's an adventure, because I get to hear it first. It's fun.
So did you read a lot of romance novels before you started writing them?
I have read them all my life, off and on. I'm obsessed with Lisa Kleypas. She's a romance writer. She's uh-huh. been writing since, gosh, at least the early 90s, I think. Mid-90s, something. Uh-huh. I adore her. And so there's a certain kind of true love that just lights me up. I just love it.
Right.
It's so fun. And so.
And I think that. Of your audience as being women.
I think so, but I've had
Are
men
there a few men that...
Text me, like, yeah, or whatever, on the Facebook. Uh-huh. Broadswords and ballrooms on the Facebook. Every once in a blue moon, a guy will say, you know, I read this and I really liked it. I'm assuming he picked it up from his wife's, you know, bedside table or something, but you never know.
Maybe it's like a guilty pleasure. And
maybe.
They don't disclose it to their golfing buddies or...
Right?
Or whatever.
Romance, no way.
So talk a little bit more about you already talked some about the form that these books take. Two people meet.
Oh, yes.
There's got to be some kind of resistance, right?
There's always
they can't
obstacles.
Just fall.
Right. The course of true love cannot run smooth or there's no book.
Right.
So there's internal struggles. Usually the guy does not want to get married. Can you blame him? I mean, why bother? But he gets convinced by the end of the book. And the woman, sometimes the woman doesn't want to get married for her own reasons, or she doesn't think she should marry him. She uh-huh. thinks she should marry somebody safer, calmer, more stable, but these heroes are a little bit wilder.
Right.
And that's part of the fun. And so in these books, you know, they end up negotiating to get meet in the middle somewhere.
And so, and part of the obstacles, if I remember right, is the Scottish versus English kind
yeah.
of theme there.
In my book, there's a definite culture clash because my guys are very family oriented. They even still have contact with some of their clan, both in Scotland, in the Highlands, but also in Nova Scotia, where a lot of people have had to immigrate, you know, mm-hmm. after the tragedy at Culloden and all of that, all the clans being broken. So this is like 100 years, well, not quite 100 years after that happened. And so people have recovered somewhat, but not completely. And so the guys in my book do a lot of trading. That's how they've made their money mm-hmm. because there's no way, you know, to make money otherwise. So they do a lot of trading with Nova Scotia specifically. They kind of stay out of, at this time, trade was widely controlled by large companies like the East, you know, the British, oh gosh, I'm blanking out, but the East India Company, they
right.
would, and then the West India Company. They would mm. cover different parts of the world, and you had to trade with them. You know, there were certain restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys kind of avoid that. They'll buy whatever they're selling, and they'll take it to Nova Scotia and sell it to the settlers there, and, you know, luxury goods or things that sugar people
right.
can't get there.
Right.
And then they will get, instead for exchange, they'll get lumber, which Nova Scotia had in abundance, mm-hmm. or fur, they'll buy some furs and take them to Europe, because lumber in Europe was very needed. You know, lumber and furs were much needed in Europe, so it was good. Now, not that this is in the book, y'all. My books are all fancy, frolicky, but this is a little background.
But you have written more historical kind of fiction.
Yes, I have done a little of that. I was interested, I've been obsessed with, actually, a medieval queen called Eleanor of Aquitaine. You guys may have seen the film The Lion in Winter with Katharine Hepburn and Peter O'Toole, oh my God, in the late 1960s. I love that film. Anyway, that's where I discovered who Eleanor was, and then when I started writing about her, it ended up, I began by writing about Princess Alice, who is the young French princess in The Lion in Winter.
Now, are these real,
real people? Historic,
real people.
Yeah, real people. I take a great deal of liberty because we don't know. We know some things about them, but we don't know anything at all about their internal lives.
And this would have been
so I write
about what
that.
Time period?
Okay, they were in the 12th century.
12th century.
So my book took place in 1170. The first one, The Queen's Pawn. Uh-huh. And then To Be Queen is another book about Eleanor. And that's just about her early life, her uh-huh. her rise to power, if you will. And her first marriage, she had two marriages. She didn't just marry one medieval king. She married two. And her first king was King Louis VII of France. But she got tired of him and eventually traded up. She actually managed to get an annulment out of the Pope by some miracle. I mean, she's amazing. She's an amazing woman. Uh-huh. And ended up marrying the King of England, Henry II.
Wow.
Anyway, love them. Love
so you
her.
Got a you have a historical basis on which to base the part for your romance novel.
Yeah, exactly. Because I find that it's more interesting to me and as a writer, and more interesting to a lot of my readers, if the background at least is historical, based in history and based in certain things that actually happened. Mm-hmm. So that we have a reality to jump off from mm-hmm. while we're enjoying ourselves in this wonderful fantasy. Well, and I don't think true love is a fantasy. My personal belief is that it's a rarity, but that it exists. Mm-hmm. Or that we find it, maybe not in a romance, perhaps, as, like in my books, but your true love may be your daughter or your child, you know, mm-hmm. the love of your life. We all have the love of our lives, mm-hmm. whether it be work. It's usually a person, though. So, anyway, I like to... Love is my favorite thing, so that's what I like to write
no
about. In my
have,
books,
no wonder you're writing these books.
Yeah, love is the thing, man. Love and joy. And these books are comedies, so uh-huh. There's an extra element of joy and a little humor thrown in, which is really fun for me as the writer.
Again, especially with the little sister.
Yes,
she's
our comic relief. Well, not that you need relief, because the other people interact. That culture clash between Scottish Highlanders and very fancy English people is pretty amusing.
Yeah.
Well, to me, anyway. Yeah.
Okay, so. Let's shift gears a little bit. I want to ask you about some questions about your writing habits and things. So when do you write? What time of day?
I have a full-time day job, so okay. I write in the morning. I'm a morning person type, mm-hmm. so I get up a little earlier when I'm composing or when I'm editing, and I write before I go to work for about an hour, sometimes longer. It depends on if it's got me by the throat, how far into it, or where I am in the process
right.
with the novel. And then I also write on my lunch hour, which is handy. I have a laptop. Mm-hmm. So I bring it, put it in my car, and work at my lunch hour. And that's
so
great.
So do you stay in your office and work? Or is
no,
it
no. I don't really have an office. So I, and even if I did, people would interrupt you. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it will break the flow, especially my characters. I don't want to make my characters mad. I want them to really know that I'm paying attention to them. So I say, okay, you guys, I only have this time and this time. And mm-hmm. they show up, and by God, we get a lot of work done.
And so do you have a target for how many words a day?
I do. I try to keep it at 2,000 when I'm writing 2, something.
2,000 a day.
I try.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
That seems like a lot.
It is a lot, but it's a question of, and I know girls who will write and say, oh, I just did 7,000 words in a day. How do they do it?
I don't know.
That's not me so
you
much.
You can't think 7,000 words
no,
in a day.
No, I don't know that I do either, though I do talk a lot. Maybe maybe I just hit record on myself and
somebody, see. If somebody wrote down every word we said.
Oh, how tedious. tedious would that be? Actually, that would
be interesting. How many words?
How many words do we say?
How many words do we say in a day?
In a day. But if I'm really going and I'm really focused, I can get 1,000 words done in an hour. And so then if I work two-hour sessions, I can get my word count.
And so, and do you work from an outline or no outline?
I used to be a very serious outliner, and I still have to have some kind of overview, a general idea of where the story's going. But lately, the last three books, my characters have given it to me one act at a time. If we think of it as a film with a three-act structure, the first act, I know exactly what's happening, I'm going, but I have to trust them, because by the time we get to the end of the first act, they tell me what's happening in the second act.
Okay.
And so we're... In some ways, it's kind of a marriage between plotting and panstering, as I've heard my friends call it. Yeah. I don't know how pansters do it when it's completely just out from the sky. I'm not sure how they do it. But then again, the same way I do it, I guess. The characters tell you what's up, and then you go with that.
If you're thinking in terms of it being three acts, you're already got...
Right. There is a structure.
Some structure there in your mind.
I'm big about structure, just in general, in my life. And it helps me know where I'm going. Yes. I like to have at least a roadmap, even if it's only a one line drawn. I'm like, okay, I see some mountains are coming up that way.
So what does your outline look like? How many pages would your outline be?
When I wrote Eleanor's books, they were 50 pages. I was really serious. I mean, I wrote about every single thing that happened that I knew was going to happen. Of course, things change. Mm-hmm. Even when you plot to that ridiculous amount, things change completely because... The book is in charge. The book is the boss. I heard Reynolds Price say that once in a talk, and I believe that wholeheartedly.
Yep.
Not that you don't edit later, of course, but your first draft, you better let them run it, because that's where it comes from. You know, the book has its own life. I don't want to stifle that. So I definitely believe in outlining. But now that things, I think I'm trusting myself a little more. I'm trusting my process a little more, and I trust my characters. They always show up for those 2 hours a day, you know, that I can eke out. And since they do, I trust them, you know, to tell me the next act before I get there.
So let me ask you this. I want to create this mental image of you working. So if I were a fly on the wall.
Yes.
I'm sitting there watching Christy English
really boring
during her hour. What am I going to see? Do you...
Well,
are you just typing away?
Typing away.
Constantly? Or do you gaze out the window when you get stuck? Or do you pace around? Or
I have moods, like we all do. I find it would actually be interesting on a work day, on a day when I have to be at the day job. Mm-hmm. It's very focused on the computer, clickety-clacking the whole hour, clickety-clack. Oh, gotta go. I have to set an alarm because it's almost like a trance state writing and sometimes when you're really flowing. And I set the alarm on my phone to make me stop 5 minutes before I have to leave, because you really have to come out of that, come back away from wherever that book is living, you know, in your subconscious.
Right.
So those days, I'm very organized. Now, if you came on a Saturday when I'm not at the day job, and I'm working. I'll get up. I'll get some tea. I'll go back and sit down and work, write a page. And I'll be like, oh, wait, I forgot this other thing. And go do something else. Or I'll just start some laundry. I do have a tendency to try to dodge and weave sometimes. But maybe we all do. I've talked to other writers, and they've told me that they've occasionally had that. How about you? Have you done
dodge
that
dodge and
too?
Weave, you mean?
Yeah, just away from the book.
Away from the book?
There are times it's hard to write. You want to write. You love it. But it's also really hard. So it makes me restless, even especially during the first act when I'm just starting the process.
Right.
I get antsy. Antsy might be a better word for it.
Yeah, I think I have a problem sitting still. So I'll work intensely for a little while, get up, pace around, get a cup of coffee. Yeah, I'm
but it still gets on the page. So
it gets on the page somehow.
You know, it works.
Not as much as you're getting on the page. But
well,
what do you
crazy
do when you get stuck? Everyone gets stuck.
Dear
once
God,
in a while.
Keep it from me. I've not. That hasn't happened to me while I've been under deadline. I hope to God it never happens to me. That hasn't
a little
happened
stuck
to me.
I mean, just like
I see.
Not like totally blanking. And
right,
you can't...
I hear what you mean. There are times it happened with Eleanor more than once when the character does not want to talk about it, My editor will ask a question in the manuscript about, well, what happened here? What's the internal process going on for this character? I need more background. I need more depth. There are times when they don't want to tell me because it's private. I mean, they're already, as a character, they're already opening themselves up to the novel in the first place.
Right.
But she didn't want to say. So we would have to negotiate. I mean, we'd have to see. I'd have to make my case as to why I wanted this information for the book, and she would tell me or she wouldn't.
Okay.
So I'd either have to find a different way to meet my editor's needs, or
so Eleanor negotiating would have to cough
it
up.
It sounds like schizophrenia,
head,
isn't it? I know, but they're real to me.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, they're real to me, and I think they have to be real to me in order to be interesting to a reader.
Yeah.
Because you live with them the whole time you're working. These people are... You know, the story, you get ideas and you make a note.
Right.
You know, at any point during the day,
mm-hmm.
I always keep my notebook
with me. You're
jotting
down notes.
Oh, always. Because they may feel like telling me a very important plot point when I'm in the middle of cooking or whatever. I better have my notebook ready. So I have one notebook for each series now.
If you go back to, I'm not going to ask you the old question of where do your ideas come from, because
heaven, I don't know.
I'm not sure anyone knows it. But let me ask you this way: if you can dial back as well as you can remember, what was the absolute first spark of an idea for this series that got you on the road? If you can even remember that.
Oh yeah, it was. What was it? It was. Actually, I was talking with my editor, and her name is Mary Altman, and she is wonderful. I love her so much. We were talking about how much we love Lisa Kleypas's Devil in Winter, which is an older romance novel, but it's both of our favorites. And she said, you know, I want to work on a book like that, where you love them so much and you have that spark of joy, even when the characters are in trouble and fighting their way out of some pretty dark stuff. I mean, that particular one is not a comedy, unlike mine. And it's dark, but there's still this fountain of joy that runs through it. And I was like, I want that too. That's what I want. And for some reason, we were like, hey, wait a minute. I don't know. After we had that email, you know, we were on the phone and had that exchange. And then I was emailing her. And it occurred to me, wait a minute, what if Highlanders came down to England and invaded England? You know, because England's always invading Scotland. Like, what would happen if these Highlanders came and invaded the London ballrooms? Would that be funny? How would that work?
That is really cool. So, if I understand right, you started with the feeling that you wanted
to
invoke.
Yeah.
And that was the first kernel of the idea.
That was where the idea came from.
Then it's like, how do I create that?
Yeah, and where does that come from? And they're like, well, here's some ideas.
Then you probably borrowed from your history background.
A little bit. Well, yeah, I know that for the Highlander ideas. Yeah, the Highlander stuff.
That
is
really cool. So
it's fun to work on
these. Presumably you were a reader before you were a writer.
Oh, I read all the time.
And who made you a reader?
My mother and my father.
You're both
readers?
I
remember they read to me since when I was very small.
Do you remember any children's books?
I was obsessed with The Cat in the Hat.
The Cat in the Hat.
That was the first book I ever read out loud, because they were insistent. They knew I could read. This was before I got into school. And they were like, you can read it. Now read it. And so I did. And they were right. I could read it. it was funny. But yeah, that one I remember.
And what about as you grew up, what about our influential books or authors? I know we all have a million of them.
Yes.
Anyone that sticks out?
I loved Madeline L'Engle. The first time I ever was, I remember being completely transported the way I have been many times since, thank God, was by Madeline L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time when I was in fourth grade.
Okay.
I borrowed it from the library and I brought it home. And I was supposed to be watching television with my brother, but I opened this book and just fell into the world. And I finished it within, you know, I don't know how long it took, 2 hours,
so
three.
You're supposed to be watching television.
Right, hanging out with the family,
and you're,
chatting.
And you're goofing off and reading. Instead.
I just couldn't. Right, I know, right. I couldn't. I don't know what we were watching, and I still couldn't tell you today.
What about movies?
I love movies. I love all movies. I love Star Wars. That kind of epic
good,
story of good and evil, and where they pull in all the archetypes. And yet they make, this is a good scenario, there are archetypes in romance the same way there are archetypes in Joseph Campbell's concepts.
Right.
And the part that's fun is bringing them to life in a new way, mm-hmm. making them be human, making them be fully formed people.
Right.
Because that's what those actors and those directors did for me when I was a kid in Star Wars, the first three. And not that the other ones aren't good, but those were the ones that were it for me. And I feel like that as I'm writing, as these characters reveal themselves to me, the people that are in these books, I feel like they're whole, complete people, in spite of the fact that it's a romance novel. We know who they are, the alpha hero, the young, you know, debutante girl. They can't just be those things.
They can't just be two-dimensional.
No,
they got to be three-dimensional.
They have to be
or
human.
Or it's not worth reading.
Yes, they have to be breathing. Or it isn't true. It isn't true love. And that's what I like.
I think that's the true of any genre.
Yes.
I don't care if it's mystery, science fiction. Mm-hmm. If they're not real.
Literary fiction.
Literary
if they're
fiction.
Not real,
if they're not real
I don't
people,
care. And
why
I
are
want
you reading
to care.
It? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And did I read that you have done some acting?
Yes.
What's your acting background?
I used to do a lot of community theater. Uh-huh. I lived in Wilmington, North Carolina for a long time, and I did a ton of Shakespeare in the Park. We had our own version.
What's your favorite role that you played?
Oh, in Shakespeare or in general? I think I loved Ophelia. I played Ophelia once.
Ooh.
She's dark and crazy,
yeah.
though. I mean, no offense to her,
emphasis
but
on
she
crazy.
Was cuckoo-ca-choo. Yeah, I guess she really did. She really was driven nuts. Bless her heart. I liked her, though. My favorite role, it wasn't Shakespearean, my favorite role was the trash can lady in An Actor's Nightmare. I had the best time.
You're living
I was
in
one
trash
of the
can?
People in the trash can. It's a short one act, and it goes with Sister Mary Ignatius Explains It All for You. Anyway, Christopher Durang. Anyway, long old theater show. But anyway, it was fun. It was fun, so...
So that's just another dimension of storytelling that you got in your
it
background.
It is. That's how you have to get to know those characters, too.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
I'm three-dimensional, but if I'm going to portray them, I have to really make them interesting.
Yep.
Or they make me more interesting. Maybe that's how it works. I don't know.
So let's see. Like I said, I missed your kickoff party here.
Oh,
for this
book.
For
How to Seduce a Scott.
Do you have any other appearances scheduled?
Well, Val and I, God bless her, she's my friend who runs the Novels and Novelties bookshop here on Main Street. She and I are talking about doing something in December for, we're calling Mary Elizabeth's book, How to Train Your Highlander. Like How to Train Your Dragon, but not. Because this Highlander, unlike the other two, is not a hulking dude, but is the cute little 18-year-old blonde Mary Elizabeth, who is a... packs quite a wallop. She's the one that you know wields the specially made broadsword. Her dad indulges her in a big way. Her mom is always trying to make her toe the line, but her dad is giving her broadswords he had made special for her, you know, that she can handle, and teaches her how to hunt and fish and shoot bows and arrows and shoot a gun. And you know, she's just
I can't wait to see
she's
matched
a tomboy.
Up with. It's got to be a special
right. He's got to be an interesting guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun.
Okay, so let me ask you this before we sign off here.
Sure.
How should your fans, what's the best way for them to follow what's going on? Is it your website?
Oh, yeah. My website is good. Of course, that's ChristyEnglish.com. So that's English. That's easy. And then Broadswords and Ballrooms on Facebook, if anybody's still on that. Yeah,
cool.
People play on Facebook.
All right.
That's happening.
Okay,
thank you so much for talking to me, Ken.
All right.
It's so much fun.
It's a pleasure, and best of luck with the books.
Thank you.
We'll see you soon.
Yes, definitely.
We both hang out here
at
the bookstore once in a while.
Love it.
I'm sure we'll see you. All right.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening today, and thanks to Christy English and to the Novels and Novelty Bookstore for hosting it. To listen to other episodes and authors, visit our website at themiddleoftheair.com.